My name is Kyle C, and today on the Stoop and Benny podcast series, I'm joined by Joel Ward, 10-year NHL vet, as we discuss some of the greatest and most interesting moments of his career. Now, because of him and Jules the Commish, I was blessed to get a chance to see some of these moments up front and personal. So I also share my point of view on some of those moments. Plus, you talk about the whole Antonio Brown reality show, some NFL talk, how we took in the Raptors championship run, and much more. It's a wide-ranging podcast. It's the longest episode that I've ever done for The Stoop, and I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Now, South Shiraz, as you may know, is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Google Podcasts, as well as Stitcher. Listen, rate, review, and subscribe to all of the shows for South Shiraz Radio. Don't be afraid to give this episode 5 stars. Damn it, you need to give this episode 5 stars. Shoot. And to listen to my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's The Stoop on South Shiraz Radio. Mabi is a cool, refreshing drink savored by Trinidadians and Bajans all over the world. It's going to make sense in a little while. You'll see. All right, let's start the podcast. Let's go. Shinny. Welcome back to The Stoop. Today I got a special guest with me. He was a 10-year veteran in the National Hockey League. He played for Nashville, Washington, and San Jose. He's a player that performed better when the stakes got higher. Look it up. And for you South Shiraz listeners, he's the brother of Jules the Commish. and if he had to choose, he'd probably be one of the few players in NHL history that would pass on a Coors Light to have some Mount Gay as his post-game drink. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the one and only Joel Ward to the show. How you doing?
Yes, sir. I'm doing well. 10 years of hockey and waiting 10 years to get on the South Shore F. So I appreciate it. I finally cracked it.
Oh my God.
I appreciate that. So thanks for having me.
Listen, man, the bouncers, they fucked up. The bouncers fucked up. They were supposed to let you in a long time ago. I don't know what the hell happened.
I appreciate this opportunity to have me anyways.
No doubt. Now, listen, like seeing that you're a hockey player, you had a great career, and we're here to discuss the best parts and most interesting moments from that. Of course, I feel it's only right to start the podcast off with Antonio Brown. I got to ask you, just as an athlete, just as a pro athlete, have you ever seen anything as Antonio Brown's last 9 months in the NFL? Or just in sports, period?
You know what, Calvin? It's especially the last couple of weeks, I would say alone, I've never seen. You called it with a brother with a blonde mustache.
Yeah.
Something is up. Mm-hmm. And I know you've called that for many times. So, I've seen it. I haven't seen anything on that level for sure in my time of playing. But hockey, anyways. But what this guy has been putting through his teammates and organizations is unbelievable. You can tell that he's definitely missing something up top.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, first of all, I gotta give props to the Steelers because how they kept him under wraps with all this shit going on. Like, this obviously this behavior didn't just start. You know what I mean? Like,
the locker room part to me when filming and like social media and blasting and putting people blasting on these closed where it should be a brotherhood. Nothing. It's a rule of thumb. First day you get in the camp, whatever stays in this building, stays in here. It doesn't leave. Right. And this guy, post-game, all this nonsense. Oh, man, can't do that. I'm surprised he even won with a character guy like that. But, guys, man, talented, of course, and football is a one-on-one sport. So I know, his talents can definitely win you a lot of games along.
Well, that's the funny thing, too, because, like, the only thing we really knew about him before that, prior to when he sat out the last game of the season last year, the only thing we really knew really was a couple of times he videotaped himself in the locker room and just You know, he had a little behaviors of a diva receiver, but that's, you know, we've seen that all the time, right? Like, so we didn't think anything of it. But, like, this whole spiral the last 9 months, like, honestly, like, it's – you're like, how do you Thanos your own career? Like, I don't get it. Like, I don't understand how you do it.
And, all that guaranteed cash gone.
Yeah, I know I referenced the blonde mustache, but I'm like, but honestly speaking, that like that's – like that for me was the red flag. For me, you know, when you come up, like I'm coming from the basketball side of things, and like when I was younger, and like you know you're playing with the older heads, and like when a guy stepped on the court and he had on like Wallabies and corduroys, like you knew that's a red flag. You knew that was like your last game. Like that was it, right? So watching this guy with the blonde mustache, I'm like, yeah, that's I recognize that. That's a situation, yeah. So when I saw that in the hair, the blue, you know, like one or two blue dreads, I'm like, yeah, some ain't right here, man. I don't know.
I'm curious to see, and I haven't heard any teammates speak out on his behalf of, hey, he's not this type of guy, he's not that type of guy. So I don't know exactly, you know, who he is as a person. But I haven't seen any teammates like in Pittsburgh that played with him for a long time to say, hey, you know what, to come to his defense or. So I'm very curious of actually who the guy really is. He had short stints obviously in Oakland and the Patriots and all of his nonsense, but I haven't seen anybody really defend the guy.
And I mean,
that brings a red flag to me.
Yeah, that too. Although I thought it was kind of interesting to see at least you heard the rumors that like some of the Patriot his teammates that even though it was only there for like a week and a half, some of those guys were upset,
you can't judge a man on offer two.
Yeah, exactly.
He balled out for a week, and that was it. You can't judge a man. Nobody's seen him at team Halloween parties where you really see individuals and how they act with one another or team functions and all that. So, I ain't buying that nonsense.
You know what it's reminiscent of? It's kind of like you know when you're dating somebody and you know you don't see their true colors for the first little while. So it's like they're just on their best behavior, and you're like, oh, that's cool. And all of a sudden, you're like, yo. Why does girl text me 40 times? I just because I missed a call? Like, what the hell? What's going on here?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
But they didn't hit that stage. They're still in that honeymoon phase, so they didn't see that yet. They're still on their second date.
Exactly. His true colors didn't come out. It's true. When his true colors came out, people really saw who the man was.
Oh, man. But, I tell you, man, like, honestly, like, the only thing that I can kind of compare it to is, like, maybe Tiger Woods. But, I mean, the Tiger Woods situation, you know, we all know how that went down. But, like, that's the only thing I can maybe kind of compare it to, just in terms of, like you thought you knew
got in the limelight.
And then it's all of a sudden, you're like, yo, what the hell? And then you start seeing the behind-the-scenes stuff, and you're like, yo, who the hell is this guy?
It just makes you wonder, though, like, what, you know, what people are really dealing with. Like, for a guy to do everything that he did and came out with all this nonsense to – you're always curious to see what, or you don't know what people are really dealing with. I mean, this guy was look attention, man. This guy almost needed a hug.
Yeah.
at times.
And what's insane to me, too, is like somebody pointed this out. The seriousness that players have, or sorry, people just have, people just have in general with their love to post everything on a cell phone. You're actually seeing like, the side effects of a career going sideways when you use social media, your cell phone incorrectly. You know what I mean? Like this is actually like a case study right now. You know what I mean?
Come on, posting the letter he got suspended from the GM and posting that on social media?
Yeah.
Who does that?
Who does that?
Or
posting Gruden's his conversation with Coach Gruden.
Come on.
You know, like just every And even his stuff on Sunday, where he's talking about, outing Kraft and like, does he have somebody on his team that can slap the ball out of his hand?
You can tell his true colors. You can't hold it back anymore. You just get to a point, and boom, he just goes off, and then doesn't realize the consequences at the end of it. Not thinking, you know, he thinks like he's invisible that he can. He can do whatever he wants. He thought he was still going to get his money back. Now he's, you know, he can't. Of course, his agent's like, yo, that's who I'd like to talk to as well, that Drew Rosenhaus guy.
Oh, you know, you know, Rosenhaus is having an ulcer attack right now.
Oh, my gosh. All that money that he's out of
now. I know, right? Right.
And he's still got a damage control now.
Yeah.
I must say, he earned his 3 or 4% with this guy on your team.
Oh, he really
for
did.
Being an agent. Not compared to other guys.
No, he really
did. This guy's just managing this guy the whole damn time. It's crazy.
Well, so just for the people who don't know, obviously you're a big time Ravens fan.
yeah.
We're watching Pittsburgh fall apart as it seems the top of the division.
Yep.
And Baltimore is really looking like a threat this year. So tell me why you think that the Ravens have a great shot to contend for the Super Bowl.
Defense. Obviously, defense wins, especially in football, wins a lot of games. So if you got a half-decent offense, above average, with an exceptional defense, it wins games. So, and then they've been doing that the last couple of years, just the offense has been stagnant last couple of, not having a playmaker, not having guys to make plays with Flacco back there. And you never really had like a big-time wide receiver. Obviously, Ray Rice going down a couple of years ago was because usually the running game was always a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But, now that they've got Hollywood Brown as a wide receiver as a threat, it's almost like a Tyreek Hill type of guy. And then, obviously Lamar Jackson right now with the way he moves. I mean, did you see him on Sunday? I mean, if he could just, maintain that offense, it doesn't have to be exceptional, but maintain the offense, the defense is going to step up, and the other teams in the division are shooting themselves in the foot anyway, so. They got a good chance. I'm not gonna. Don't want to get too far ahead because it's three damn games. But but they actually got a good shot to win their division.
Yeah, and I'm happy for Lamar Jackson though because I don't really watch college football a lot, but I knew how good he was obviously in his 3 year run at Louisville.
Louisville,
and had a Heisman Trophy. Had a better season the following season after that, and then they're trying to convert him to a receiver. You know what I mean? So watching this success, I'm actually like genuinely happy for him. I know like Baltimore's not my team, but I'm happy to see him succeed because I'm like,
I'm telling people like this guy's a first round draft pick. Not like he was a ninth round. It wasn't like he's some slouch off the or undrafted. This guy was a first round for a reason.
Yeah.
Nobody's giving him the credit. So it is good to see him ball out right now and proving a lot of people. That he's just not just this runner. That he's actually able to throw the ball a little bit this year. And, we'll see what happens down the stretch. So we'll see. Still got a long way to go.
And who do you think is actually going to win the Super Bowl this year? If he could predict it that far.
Ooh, that's. I got to stay with my Ravens. I put $100 on them in Vegas, so I got to. I got to lead on them. I got to lead on them and say, hey, even though I'm biased, that's my squad, but. From an outsider looking at them, they actually have a good shot. They have a good shot. Obviously, the Patriots are front runners, and I'm just hoping they don't get to the final again because, Jesus, can't see another Super Bowl with these guys in it.
I know.
But, it's hard to say them to repeat again, but without picking them, without a loop, I think Baltimore has a good shot.
Yeah, honestly, in the AFC, I would, I was trying to come from the joking perspective, but actually like, watching the last couple of weeks, I'm like, yeah, you know what? He actually got a good shot for real. Like I think,
I think
in the AFC, honestly, I think it's them, it's the Patriots, obviously, and the Chiefs. Like I think those three teams are like, I think they're gonna be like the three powerhouses. Barring anybody gets hurt or anything like that. But I think they're gonna be the three teams in that conference that are gonna be like the head and shoulders above everybody.
I agree. I think the defense wise, obviously, the Chiefs is that's. You can't win every game 65-50, but I think that's going to be I think that's going to come down to late in games and defense, making plays. But I obviously the Patriots. Jeez, I hate to say it.
I know.
And they got an easy schedule. They're just steamrolling through all these teams.
Yeah,
and then play
the AFC. They play twice. I know they're playing Buffalo on Sunday. Yeah. But you pretty much know how that's going to go.
Exactly.
You pretty much know how that's gonna go. They have the AFC figured out. Like that's like a cheat code for them every year. You know what I mean? Like it's an automatic buy every time.
Your 49ers look good though. I give you that.
You know what, Joel? I actually think they're a sleeper. To be honest with you, man. That defense is looking really solid as well.
The Bay Area here is excited about the 49ers.
I can imagine.
People got the flags out their cars already after 3 games. People are excited. Front page of the paper. Garoppolo is a superhero.
Yo, we're hurting, man. We haven't won a title since 95, man. We're hurting. Not since Deion Sanders and them was still high stepping. Like we're missing that right now, man. We need that.
I know. Especially a franchise like that. But it's crazy to think that you win 2 or 3 games and people are like, you know, you do whatever you want. People don't, as long as you're winning. Everybody's in a good mood. It's crazy.
It's crazy for real. And I mean, we're not even out of September yet. I know, and people's
like not Halloween yet.
their mentalities have changed up so much. Now,
yep.
So as I mentioned before, obviously, Jules the Commission is your brother, and during the NBA playoffs, he had a chance when we were doing our Raptors run. He had a chance to share his experience of going to the NBA Finals. Now, as a man of the six. A Scarborough youth living in the Bay Area. How was it for you to watch the Raptors win the finals from your side?
And just man, I, progress? I had my Raptors t-shirt and hat on today. I must represent 3 or 4 times a week. I got a different t-shirt on. And people here are, people here have been pretty good about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Everyone's congratulating. Everyone is well-deserved, you know, good game, good series and all that stuff. But, I mean, the games that we went to when Jules came down, I remember Jules telling me, he said his eyes were watery after the game. I forgot. He says he's booking a ticket to come. Or when they clinch, I think when they clinch the series, he said that he's booking a ticket to come down. And just I said, well, we ain't got no tickets right now. So you could be watching the games on the couch, but I happened to find a way and get some tickets, and we ended up going to game 4.
Yeah,
I believe. Yeah, so which was, man, I mean that might have been the best, but this might have been the best Raptors game all year.
Oh yeah, because they were
on point. Oh man, everything was going our way, man. Everything from the jump, actually first maybe minute or two, it was kind of missing a lot of shots, and then boom. Things just started clicking. Kawhi was single-handedly keeping us in the game, and then everyone kind of just stepped up after that.
I think one of the most amazing things watching the finals, obviously outside of the Raptors winning, was I think for me was watching the fans in Golden State, like how they just took over the arena. Like that to me, like watching it on TV, I can imagine what it was like because you were there, but just watching it on TV, that looked insane. Like that shit looked crazy to me.
There was Raps fans everywhere. I mean, and after the game, we obviously stuck around. And, you know, everybody was kind of chanting and everybody, let's go Raps. And I couldn't know how the amount of people funneled down. We didn't realize exactly how many people were actually, you know, at the game representing Toronto and the Raps. But obviously, you get a lot of people from Vancouver and North here, you know, coming down the games. A lot of people from Toronto made the trip. And I believe it was on a Friday, I think it was. So, you know, people made a good weekend out of it, right?
Yeah.
Man, but the fan base, it was crazy. It was, you know what? And it actually was, people showed a lot of respect. Even the people, you know, we're chopping up with the people in front of us and behind us. But, you know, at the end of the game, they were saying, congratulations, man, your team is nice. You know, obviously they've been spoiled winning the last couple of years, so they can say that. So, you know, it was an unbelievable feeling, man. It was an unbelievable feeling. And the fact that my little guy get to witness it too, for game 7, we watched it. For Toronto to win it all was an unbelievable feeling all across the six.
Yeah, and it's funny because even now, like, you know, this summer, even now, driving around and you're still seeing people coming out of their cars, you know, Raptor jacket, Raptor hat. You know, their kids are all wrapped it up.
Calvin, we went to Wonderland, and I was telling Jules that hat with the gold. You know, the gold lettering there, the gold championship hat.
Yeah.
Dude, people, everybody had one of those at Wonderland.
Yo, that's the most popular hat. Summer. That was the most popular hat I've seen all summer.
Everybody. I was like, Jules, people are repping this hat. They're crazy still. He goes, yeah, man, since you've been home, like everyone's had a Raptors t-shirt, you know, something. Hat, bandana, something. Some memorabilia, some apparel stuff. But that hat alone, I am curious on the sales on that alone. Holy.
Yeah, that had to have been huge because it's you literally see that everywhere, and I mean in all races, don't even matter, like every race, color, creed, every old woman, old man, everything, all the way
down the line. Yeah,
You're seeing people with that. Like, it just, they have it hanging, they have it hanging from their rearview mirror. Like, it's just crazy. Yeah. Like, it's the way you've been seeing it. Like, it's just, like, it's nice to see. It's nice to see, actually.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of people hear, too. And like, oh, the parade, like, oh, shoot, I didn't know you had Indian people. I didn't know you had Chinese, Asian people. I didn't know you had black people. All this at the parade, the people were just kind of like, holy shit, I didn't know what, I didn't know Toronto at all.
Yeah,
almost in a bubble too, right?
Yeah, they thought
you live here in California.
they thought they knew, and they didn't realize like 2 million people showing up, and you're like, "Yo, what the hell?" And it's just a sea of just different races, just all blended together, man. Just celebrating as one. It's like that. That to me was like that. Honestly, Joe, was like one of the craziest. That was like one of the craziest things for me to watch. And I'm not even a Raptors fan per se, but that was one of the craziest things that I could watch.
I still don't know. I still don't know why either, to be honest with you. Your hate for that. Not a Raptors fan. I know you say that.
No, I'm not. I don't. The thing is, I don't hate on them. I'm not a hater on them, but I'm just, you know, I just don't have a favorite team basketball-wise. I just like just watching the league, but you know, for me, like, you know, you want to see the home team do well. So that to me was that I'm you know, coming from, you know, but like, so I don't want to sit there and be like, yo, I'm the Raptors guy and stuff, because too many people will call me out on that, right?
Okay. Okay.
All the years I've been chastising Raptors fans. I'm like, yeah, I can't claim this one, man. I can't. But
okay.
But it's
with, I'm sure, but you're happy regardless.
Oh no, of course. Like for me, I always said, man, I always wanted to be a part of like seeing a city win the championship. Man, I always wanted to, you know, be part of the parade, and you see it on TV so much times when you're a kid. So you know, you want to see that in person. So to actually be able to see that in person was like, that was really cool.
Yeah,
it was like a bucket list thing.
That was, what a feel, you know, watching every game, like, you know, just watching on TV at home, like. Just with us in our own living room, we're just sitting there chilling and cheering, and I'm like, "Yeah, like Kathy, we can't, like, we're just here just by ourselves cheering. Like, when was the last time we kind of got up and jumping around in the TV screen and and bouncing around like kids? Like, you know, we were just so excited, even from all the way down here, and I could only imagine what it was like back home.
It was insane. Like I said, that was one of the best things to see. Just the way the city just galvanized behind it. I think it was just. It was amazing. But one thing I'll say though is I'm definitely gonna miss Kawhi, man. That's one thing for sure.
I know.
Oh man.
I know.
Oh, man.
And you know, why couldn't he just say, "Hey, man"? Well, I'm sure he was torn. Whether I know, all the rumors came out if the Clippers weren't gonna get Paul George, that he might have considered staying. But I think it just led on to so many people. Actually, people kind of just, I thought first he's gone. Automatically he's gone. He got him for the year. He's gone. Then as it kind of got later and later in the summer, it gave people hope of like, yo, he might actually stay. You know, he might actually, you know, he's got everything for the city. He's got the key. He's got a free house, this and that. And then all the rumors starting, his kids are in school, his doctor this. People saw him, you know, getting a new bank account, all this nonsense. So,
they,
you know,
at Home Depot
all
getting boxes. They're like, oh, shit.
Oh, gosh. I'm like, yeah, he stayed. But then he left. But, hey, I'm not mad. I still got my Kawhi T-shirt.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll still even buy the Kawhi red jersey if it's still available.
Yeah, it's
funny. I'm not mad. I'll take it for what it's worth.
Mm-hmm. No,
I'll take it for what it's worth.
Absolutely. Because for me, that's one of my favorite players. So I'm still going to be watching him wherever he goes. He's on the Clippers. I'll be watching a lot of Clippers games this year just because I love Kawhi. But, like, it's... You know, it was just cool to have that. I mean, we got the best result, but it was just, even if we didn't win, to me, it was cool just having him here. Because, like, to me, that's what elite, you know, you want to see what an elite player is about, man. We haven't had that in a really long time.
I know. You know, in the city of Toronto, having that elite player, like, for any of the sports, to have somebody on that, like, top, you know, 3 to 5 in the whole league.
Mm-hmm.
Any of the sports.
It's a different feeling. It's a different feeling, and I mean, shit, you know that. I mean, you played with one, like for a good part of your career.
Yeah,
you played with one with Ovi, but
and to see these guys in their craft is like, you can't teach any of that. I'm just glad that he was around to rub off on others. Now moving forward, those guys know how to carry it. You know, carry the torch now and kind of understand what it takes to win.
Especially guys like Siakam and stuff. Like, that's, I think that's
come on. What perfect timing for a guy that's coming in his own now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. To learn from a guy like that on a day-to-day.
Yeah. Because that's the thing too. Like Kawhi wasn't like the blue chipper. He wasn't the guy that was like everybody thought was gonna be like the you know like a prodigy. You know what I mean? Like he kind of came out of left field too. You know what I mean? When you look at his career, so guys could definitely learn from his experience. You know what I mean?
Oh, I put in the work. Yeah. Yeah. I admire those guys like that, man. The guys like that really take in that craft and put in that amount of work and love the game like that. It was dope to see, man.
Yeah,
no. I was hitting shots, man. The jumper was hitting jumper after jumper coming in, no problem. Like, oh, it was like automatic.
All fundamentals, man.
That's the one thing
I always say in sports, man. Is just it doesn't matter where you are. It's like, yo, if you don't master the fundamentals, man, like once you have that mastered, it's just, man, it just, there's so much things you can do. It just, and the confidence that you just have, you know what I mean? Once you have the fundamentals mastered, like, it just doesn't matter what you do. I don't care how fast, how strong you got to be, how high you could jump, how fast you could skate. It doesn't matter, man. Like, if you don't have the fundamentals down packed, like,
yeah,
man, you know, and you saw that. You saw what that's
about. Yeah. But, you know, he could rely on that jumper, no problem.
Yeah,
it was like nothing. It was just nothing. Yeah, so it was fun to see. It was really good to see, and obviously to experience that, to see somebody on that level to be playing for our team was, shoot, man. It was fun to watch.
I know. I definitely agree. So, like I said, I know part of this is, you know, I definitely want to talk about some of your best experiences, you know, throughout your career.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I kind of want to go a little bit by bit on each team that you're on, some of the best experiences, but. And I'm definitely going to interject some of my points from my point of view from watching from my side. But I know when you started off with Nashville, I know obviously that was a big moment because, you know, you came through the ranks of the minor leagues and, you know, you kind of bounced around a little bit. But then you finally got on. But I would say one of the best parts of your career was, you know, when you're on Nashville. I know you had a great time there. But that 2011 playoff team. And that run that you guys went on, and at the time you beat Anaheim, you pushed the Canucks to six games, but you in particular went on that crazy run, and I believe you set records for the most playoff points in franchise history at the time, and I would say it put you on a different stage. So I just want to know, like, just, you know, cause I never got a chance to really ask you those specific questions, but like.
Yeah.
What was your thought process during that time, like just on that run, like during that period in time? You can talk about like other parts of it too, but like in that specific period, like what was that like?
You know what? During that run, you know, it was confidence. The puck seemed like a beach ball, man. Like the game felt so much slower in my eyes. I could see everything. I mean, once I got your adrenaline in playoffs time coming in, you know, as soon as you come off the bus, you could hear the crowd, people are, you know, chanting, you know, people are throwing stuff at you, people, you know, on the road. There's no better feeling in playoff hockey, obviously, was what I've obviously known before, but playoff sports in general, like, there's no better feeling. I wish everybody could experience a playoff atmosphere game. It's almost like a kid playing in your backyard, hey, last goal wins, or, you know, you feel like a kid again, you feel like a kid. And you want to, you're trying to make so many, you're trying to make the next play. You want to make the next play. So, you know, I think after experience of going through, you know, we played Anaheim. It was the first time that Nashville's ever gone past the second round. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge accomplishment for the organization, for the fan base. You know, we had our team was Uncle Barry, as I said, Barry Trotz was the coach. Mm-hmm. And he was really good at selling like a team atmosphere, like a family base. So we fought for each other, and that's what made it fun, because we never had any superstars. Our goalie was Pekka, and he was our beast, and we had to defend, and everybody had to contribute. So I mean, the fact that like I was contributing, we had like Jared Smithson who was contributing, Jordan Tutu was scoring goals, we had everybody kind of chipping in. So when somebody would score that you wouldn't expect to score, everybody got up, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, when I got my chance I got a little power play time, and my confidence was, the game felt so much slower. And I always said it, there was only a few moments I could think of my career where I could felt the game was, where I could see everything so clear, man. So I can almost think of like how some elite superstars, of how they see the game. a little bit. I kind of experienced it for a couple moments in my version of it.
Yeah.
And these guys do it. They see that all the time. Everything's moving so slow. The game looks so slow, so easy. You can make a pass, get open, pass it back, get open. You know, the puck seemed like a big fucking garbage can. I tried to just tap it in. And it was such an adrenaline, man. After every game was an adrenaline rush of, you know, you're trying to chase the dream of winning the Stanley Cup. But, I had the confidence in my coaches and my teammates. My teammates were feeding me the puck. I was getting the puck. When you get that vibe off your line mates, you know, anything's possible. And, and then on the flip side, you see some guys that just crash. Like some guys want no part of it, right? They're just too scared, too nervous. So but I must say, I wish everybody experienced a playoff game of some sort, man, because the feeling of that adrenaline and rushes, it overtakes your body. It overtakes your body where you're going on just pure adrenaline and just you're so hyped and you're so amped up that you don't need anything. You don't need anything to fill your tank. You're ready to go. But it was great memories, man. I got my career started there. I was thankful for Barry Trotz and David Poile, who's a GM there, that gave me an opportunity to play. And I actually made that team because of a guy named Jed Ortmeyer. He had an illness. I remember. Yeah, he had an illness, and it left a spot for me on the right wing side.
Oh, wow.
I forgot what he had, but he was on the team, and it was kind of like a life-threatening career.
Oh, shoot.
And that opened up a gate for me to battle the spot. So once I kind of seen that opening, and I kind of I got my way in there and made a name for myself. I ended up sticking around.
And,
yeah.
Okay, so from my perspective, right, just watching, like, you know, following your career during this point in time and stuff, and, you know, I'm watching this stuff and you know, knowing the whole story, everything else, like, it's, you know, we all know the story, and it's great, right?
Yep.
I shared this with your brother. I shared this with Julian, but I'll share this with you, which is, you might find funny. So, you know, we're watching this whole run. We're amazed by this run that you guys are going on, as for yourself and the team. Like, it's crazy. But you guys were down, I think, 3-1 to Vancouver, and you scored the first goal, right? And I remember being like, and I'll never forget this, Joel. I was so happy. I was mad happy. We're texting, texting each other, going crazy and stuff, right? When you scored the second goal, like when you, I think it was a one-timer, when you scored the second goal, honestly speaking, I didn't make a sound. I sat there. I just had a child, and I think my child was like by me on the couch or something like that.
Let me stop you there for a sec. Mm-hmm. That was one of the moments where everything. See, if you gave me that pass today, I don't know if I can hit that shot. Like, in that moment, though, I remember that happening. The pass came across, a hard pass, and for me to get it up like that so quickly, how the game was so slow, like everything just seemed picture perfect. The puck just seemed so big in my eyes, and boom, I took a crack at it and so that was one of the moments that I experienced when I was playing. Yeah, but sorry to cut you off.
That's crazy, because like I said, I didn't even, Joel, I just stood there. I was just staring at the TV. I didn't make a sound, and all I kept thinking, honestly, at that point was, I was just like, yo, your life, it just changed. I'm like, your life is just about to change in a way that, like, I don't know if we, like, all of us, like, you know, you're anticipating it, but then when it comes, you're just like, this shit is here right now. Like, that's all I kept rattling through my head, because I know you're going to the free agency that summer and stuff. That run, just like, everything just crested at that moment. But like, for me personally, like, that was the moment where I just stared at you. I was watching on TV. I was just staring at you like, this guy's life is about to change. Like, holy shit. Like, that's all I kept thinking. Like, this is fucking crazy. That's all I kept thinking. Like, and I just stood there. Like, I know you guys won the game and stuff, but like, honestly, Joe, like, I just sat there. Like, I was stunned. I just sat there like, it's here. It's here now.
Yeah.
You know, it was
like a defining moment of like, we're here. Finally made it. Finally, like, contributing and finally doing all these things all together. And you know what? The fact that in Vancouver, like, Hockey Night in Canada, you know, all these things that played into it too, that was an unbelievable feeling. I mean, you know, to do that on in a Canadian city where hockey is, you know, obviously really is huge. And, you know, to win the game on top of it for a comeback. Oh, man. Jeez.
I mean, you've had many moments and shit, but, like, yo, that honestly was, like, one of – that's the – I like, I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that feeling when you scored that second goal. Like, I'll never forget
that. Yeah.
Because, like, I just stood there just stunned, man. I just stood there, like, I was – yo, I was – obviously, I was happy, but I was just – I just stood there, like, wow, I'm watching your life change in real time right now. Like, this is happening. You know what I mean? Like, this is unbelievable. That's all I can
I would think. Watch those clips. I would watch those clips from there on out to and before every other playoff game after that. From like even from like when I was here in San Jose, we went to the finals.
Really?
I'd be watching those clips. Oh, yep. Just memory. Just boom. All the good moments. Let's repeat them. Let's do this again. And I would just kind of keep replaying them before I left the house to go to the rink. I just keep watching it over and over and over.
Wow.
Because
it's such a positive moment. Like, how could you not?
Yeah. How could you not? Yeah. I mean, you know, going fresh into a game. Yeah, I could do that again. You know, going to the next playoff round and so on and so forth.
That's
it's crazy.
That's crazy. And also one of the biggest success that you had there had nothing to do with hockey as well. It had everything to do with the whole Boys and Girls Club with Malik and you know and treating him as a big brother. Like, what? Just straight up, like, what made you even go down that path and what made you do that?
You know what? I fell in love with the city, man. I loved it. It was my first time. I was a full-time NHL player. The people embraced me. The crowd, you know, everything. Everybody was giving a lot of love. So I was kind of like, what can I do to help out? I worked with the foundation a lot with the Preds. And I was like, what can I do to help? And then I met a lady, Liz Cosbeth, I think her last name was. She worked at the Boys and Girls, all Big Brothers, Big Sisters program in Nashville. And we were at an event one time, and she was like, you know, why don't you come help with us at our golf tournament? I'll never forget this conversation. Why don't you help with the golf tournament coming up? You know, you can kind of meet you can see some of the matches, the littles, the bigs. And I was like, yeah, all right, I'll come by the golf tournament. And I went home that night, and I was like, man, let me just sign up for this program. I called her. I was like, so what's the requirements? How long do I got to be, you know, with the little, and how long? She's like, oh, it's only like 4 hours a month. I'm like, 4 hours a month? I'm like, sure, I can do that. So then I just called her. I called her up, and she's like, I did like a little interview. I had to give a couple of references from the team or whoever. And then she's like, you know what? I got a match for you a couple of days. His name is Malik Johnson. You know, do you want to meet him? She's like, yeah, you can talk to his family, hit it up, blah, blah, and you can, you know, chat to him for a little bit, see how it goes. And sure enough, went to his house. We went to go get ice cream. And then that was it. That was history. That was it, man. We just connected. We vibed. Good dude, man. Hey, what an unbelievable. This man's come from such a long way, man. I got him in grade 7 at the time. And his reading level wasn't that strong. Reading level was not strong. And we worked on that. We came to my place a lot. We did a lot of homework. So it was four hours a month. This guy's at my house for 4 hours a night. By the end of that first year, he was sleeping over. He was buying pizza. We'd stay over and play video games. This guy was staying at the crib. Awesome. You know, we did homework. Just repetition. You got to do the homework, you know. It's just like any other kid at that time. Just needed a kick in the ass to keep going. Mm-hmm. And, you know, man, he's come a long way, man. First one in his family to graduate high school.
Wow.
Yeah, two brothers. One brother passed away a while ago. His mom, stepdad, and the parents are very nice people. Stepdad was a truck driver, so he was gone a lot on the road from time to time.
Yeah.
So, you know what? And then Malik and I, and you know, he lived in the projects, man. He lived in a tough neighborhood, so it was hard to keep him focused because his boys, he lost a lot of his friends.
Yeah.
Violence, gun violence. He lost a lot of his crew, man. So he had no one really to turn to, and the ones that he did were in the gang life. So he, you know, they're coming out posing money, cash, you know, dope, and all sorts of nonsense, and flashing jewelry and everything. So he was kind of torn at one point, like, oh man, like I really got to go do all the school. These guys are out in the corner making all this money, da da da. So I remember, you know, in order to drop him off at his place, at his complex, he lived in like in a Bloods neighborhood. So, and he, I remember, oh, geez, and he would not get out of the car. I remember one day dropping him off. I'm like, all right, Malik, you're here. He goes, you mind if I stay for a bit? I go, in the car? To do what? I'm like, I gotta get home. He's like, man, I'm afraid to get out of the car. I go, oh, shit. So, I go, all right, I'll walk you. So I had to walk into his door from here on in. And you're passing by all these dudes at the corner chilling on the stoop. But luckily, they respected what I was doing. Yeah. And I, you know, I would try to offer them, you know, hey, come to the game, man. It's all fun. It's all fun and games. And, you know, I would try to, you know, I chopped it up with them at the stoop there. But Malik was always terrified to get out of the car and walk to his door by himself.
Wow.
So, geez, I'm like, if he's scared. So I'm like, all right, Malik, let's do this together. Let's do this. But, you know, after a while, after they see me picking it up, every time I had to come pick him up, I had to roll all my windows down, make sure everything was good.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, because my truck was all tinted windows and everything. Yeah, so I had to make sure. Yeah. So it was, but you know what, man, good people. Family was really good, man. I'm so happy for them. You know, and the Predators took him under their wing and helped him out too. Now. He still works for the Preds.
That's awesome.
He gets treated so well there with the Preds. He's 22 now, I think. So getting up there in age. So I'm like, hey, you got to start looking for your future now. Like, you know, you're a big man now. So, when he went to his graduation, when he graduated high school, my gosh, that was like the greatest feeling, man. It was, you know, a lot of teachers doubted him. Everyone was like, he had a lot of support. A lot of his family, everybody was supporting him, but at the same time, like, you know, some teachers were kind of doubting him a little bit, you know, but he came a long way and got through it and battled. So I'm so proud of him. Love the dude, man. He's a good kid. I was a good, big man now, actually. So
yeah.
It was really good. Yeah, I wish actually more guys. That's only 4 hours a month. I mean, shoot, that wasn't a big deal at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I had the kid all day. I just, you know, do anything, just hanging out. He just wanted somebody to, like, you know, just homework, whether we go wash the cars, whether we go play games, whether we, you know, play at the YMCA. We'll do all sorts of things. But
love and support, man. Actually, that's what a lot of kids, you know, in those situations, that's what they need, right?
What they need. You just needed a good hug and some, a little guidance. His parents were cool. His stepdad was just away a lot. So it was hard for, like, having that father figure, because he was kind of mad. I was looking after two younger brothers, too. So it was a lot on his plate, too.
Yeah,
on his plate. But actually, shoot, I just talked to him the other day. Actually, just send my little one, Robinson, a little bit, Preds, mini, a little small jersey with my name and my number. Yeah. So, yeah, we still talk all the time. He's doing okay.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a great story, honestly. Just because I'm like, that you'd be surprised, like I said, the attention that you give to some of these kids sometimes, man, how much that goes a long way. And we're coming up too. Like, you know, you're playing, you're doing your thing in, like, hockey, but just not even that. Just in general, like, when you're at that age, sometimes sometimes you need that extra little attention, man. And you'd be surprised
how
far that can give you confidence.
You know? I know. It was just some small, simple things I did not realize. Just these little things of helping with some spelling, some grammar, some reading. You know, the confidence that he just gained from that alone. And, you know, obviously the organization helped him with a little job here and there. Actually, basically what he does now is he takes care of the referees during the game. So if they need water bottles, towels, he takes care of their locker room. So
that's awesome.
That's his job. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's what he does. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Let's segue to when you got to Washington, right?
Yeah.
So you get to the Capitals, you know, the first season is interesting, definitely, for sure. You're getting acclimated to it with a new city, new organization, new teammates. The platform is now bigger. You're playing with Ovi, for Christ's sakes. Like, the expectations for the team and even yourself, like, everything is just bigger. Like, so before we even get to the hockey aspect real quick, like, how underrated is that change in the beginning, especially when you develop that love and that bond in Nashville and growing accustomed to the city that, you know, was part of your progress?
I know. You know what? I wanted to stay. I tried to make it work to stay.
Mm-hmm.
They said that they couldn't really, they didn't know what my worth was or couldn't afford, but I would have, to be honest, I would have stayed I fell in love with the city. I had Malik there too. And I, you know, I didn't want to leave the guy either. Part of me didn't want to leave the guy.
Yeah.
You know, but they didn't really say too much on their end, so I had to kind of pick up and leave. So yeah, when I was coming to DC, it was exciting, man. That was always what you said. You're on primetime games, you're on the East Coast, so the travel was better. You're closer to home. You know, you're closer to rice and peas and oxtail. you're closer to home, man. It felt like home again. You know, being back home on the East Coast and in a nice city too. Again, hockey, big sports fanatic town. You know, Redskins, Capitals, the Nationals were doing well. You know, a lot going on. And as I said, you're playing with, geez, I was playing with one of the best of all time. If not the almost best of all time. Yeah. So it was, yeah, definitely becoming the pure goal scorer in the history of the National Hockey League. So, you know, I couldn't, my time there was amazing, man. I lived in Arlington, right across from Georgetown University. The city was nice. You know, met a lot of good friends, a lot of cool people. Got a chance to go to my Ravens games, which was another bonus.
Oh, yeah. And thank you, because I got a good chance to go tag along. Yeah. Yeah,
you're welcome. So, you know, obviously, and the hockey part, the East Coast was just a lot better overall in the body. The first year I got there, I was Bruce Boudreaux. I had four coaches in 4 years, pretty much.
Yeah,
that first year, I just... You know, me as a player, I wasn't what you call like a sexy hockey player. You know, I don't really move that smooth. I don't, you know, so I have to like prove myself all over again to like new teammates, new line mates, new coaching staff. Even though I'm signed there for 4 years, whatever, you're still. I'm always the underdog. I'm always like, I got to fight for my keep, regardless of I could have been making whatever $15 million a year. I still would have had to fight for my keep, and I know that, and it's always been like that from since I was a minor hockey player all the way up to pro. So you know, it was an adjustment period. You know, obviously at first, Bruce Boudreaux was my first coach, and I didn't really have a good rapport per se. I guess I really don't know. but you know, he kind of got fired quickly, and then I had I had Dale Hunter came in, and same thing. I just could not catch my groove with him, you know. And then I had Adam Oates, who actually helped me, who actually kind of saved my hockey career, to be honest with you. Just taught me a lot of small little intangibles and small details that I've kind of forgotten over the years. That kind of refreshed my mind and taught me, and how to, you know, basically how to score and how to make more plays. And that kind of helped me in having a great year there. We did okay as a team. And then I had Uncle Barry Trotz again in my last year, reunited back in Washington. So that was fun again to reunite with him, who was the guy that kind of who gave me my first full-time job.
Yeah, for sure.
But love DC, man. Same thing. Tried to like stay again. Loved it. four years. Hey, man, this would be nice, but it didn't work out that way. And now I'm living in California. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought, so, right?
Yeah, I never thought, you know, when the opportunity came up, I was like, man, I'm playing hockey in California. I never thought I'd ever fly out here in my life, to be honest with you. So play hockey and get to see it on the West Coast for the first time ever was a bonus. And I knew it was always good teams because it was always one of my favorite places to come and play because of the atmosphere. So I knew on the road what it was like already when you came to the Shark Tank. And then now to be part of it, it was a cool feeling, man. Cool feeling. So, you know, got to the finals too and everything. So it was, damn, we should have won. We should have won, shit. But it was all good. But no, it was probably my highlight, though, going to the finals. So, I experienced so many great things in this game, man.
Now, I got to ask you real quick, though. Like, you know, obviously, that go to take you right back to that first year in D.C. You're playing in Game 7 against Boston. Literally anything can happen. First Game 7. That was your first Game 7, right? Was it your first Game 7 in the NHL, I mean, in the NHL?
I believe so, yeah. No, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, I believe it was. And you know how it goes, especially in hockey, too. Like, literally anything can happen in the Game 7. And you scored a game-winning goal to end the series. And it became, like, one of your greatest and weirdest moments at the same time. but before we get to the weird part real quick, what was that moment for you? Like, just when you Like from the time you're coming down that 2-on-1 and then the feeling of just ending that dream of Boston.
Honestly, Calvin, the fact that I'm like on the ice in a game 7, man, I was like, this is some crazy shit. I thought this was, what a feeling, bro. Just skating around with a smile on my face. I mean, game 7, I got nothing to lose. I was playing with Mike Knuble. We were playing fourth line.
Mm-hmm.
And we were playing a few minutes here and there, but the fact that we were on there, and then I remember the play, obviously, to a T. Benoit Pouliot, a guy I actually played in Houston with, tried to dump the puck in. This is what the messed up part was. This guy tried to dump the puck and took a full slap shot. This Knuble guy blocks it. The rink is 200 feet by 85, I think it is. This guy he wants to get off the ice, so he's trying to dump the puck in. Knuble blocks this thing. I go, oh shit, we're going on a 2-on-1. A 2-on-1 going up and we're going down the ice. And I remember, I told myself, you know what? He ain't passing this over. I can tell the way that he's got the puck on his backhand that he was just taking it to the net, and then he was just, so I saw the way that he's moving. I kind of slowed down because I knew there could have been a loose puck because the way that he was taking the puck on his backhand to the net.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just there to clean up the garbage. And oh man, it was like happy, tears, cry. I didn't know what it was, man. I was like, holy shit, I just scored the goal. I just scored the game 7 for the Washington Capitals on a 2-on-1 with Mike Knuble. Like, man.
And against
what was
Boston.
Going through that could not end Boston. On the road, too.
Yeah.
In Boston.
Yeah.
And the fact that we were underdogs, that whole... they finished a lot higher than them. They were supposed to win it. They had a good team, actually. Mm-hmm. And we just... Oh, man. Holtby, that's when Holtby kind of got his... He got called up and was in the groove,
yeah,
man.
Their
goalie at the time,
nice.
I think. Yeah, he came from the minors, and he just stepped up huge. But... Oh man, scored a game 7. Crazy.
Overtime goal.
Guys, we're jumping like schoolgirls in the corner, screaming, yelling. Oh man. And got the puck. You do an interview. Then I get on the plane. It all went down. All went down the hill from there. Hey, what's his name? My teammate came up to me and was like, hey, Ward, I just want to let you know, man. Like, I hope you don't read your social media. You got some tough messages. I'm like, it won't be that bad. nothing can kill my vibe right now. This is the high of the highest I've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got home and I remember, I'm like, holy shit, people want me dead. And that's when I was like, oh, no, nah, this can't be real. This can't be real. Jeff Halpern was the guy. Jeff Halpern.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, no, this can't be real. Then the next day, I'm kind of like looking at messages. I'm like, hey, whatever. Thinking the next day, my phone was blowing up. I had USA Today. I had ESPN. I had TSN. I had... You name
you're,
it.
You were leading around the horn and PTI and shit. I remember that.
Right.
I remember that.
I go, dream come true. I'm on Kornheiser and Wilbon. What? Not for the right reason.
Not for the reason. Yeah, right. And the joke,
guys are my heroes.
And the joke is, Joel, because, you know, Kornheiser is such a, the both of them are, they're kind of based in D.C., they would have talked about that. If even if that didn't happen, they would have talked about the goal.
They would have talked about it. I know.
So we were like, yo, I'm making sure I'm watching PTI tomorrow. They're gonna be talking about Joel and PTI. So we're all getting ready to watch that. So when you hear this, you're like, ah, fuck, man.
Oh, you know? Man. I was like, damn it. I'm on one of my favorite shows. I look forward to watching on a day-to-day after practice, come home. Late in the afternoon, Kornheiser and PTI come on, and I'm on it for the... I was like, oh, not the way I wanted to be on, but I had no choice. But I had everyone calling me. Then I had, like, the police calling me. Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I think so. Like, I had, I was having, like, extra security. But it was crazy to see how the response of people were firing off of wanting me dead, calling me this, calling me that. Yeah. And at that time, you know, it was such a good eye-opener, though, for my teammates, though, to see what black people go through.
Yeah.
And yeah. And for the guys that did not understand and could not believe the message I was getting, for trying to do the same thing that everybody else was trying to do. Mm-hmm. Be a hero, score a big goal, and your team should advance.
Live a dream.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that was it. That was it. Just trying to score a goal and move on. And you know, and be that hero in a game seven. And the fact that people started tweeting this and that. But it was an eye-opener for my teammates to see. And a lot of guys were like, holy, came up to me too, right? After, like, I never knew you'd have to go through something like that ever. Like, you know, I'm like, yeah, there you go.
And it had to be Boston, right? Like, it had to be Boston. Like,
I know.
Like, when I saw it, it's just like, it's funny. Like, part of me, a part of me was upset, but the other part of us, if you know Boston's history of racism, you're just like, it's Boston. Yeah. It's Boston.
PK was getting it too, and he's playing with Boston.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Oh, man. Yeah, so, of course, everybody next day looking at you like, what are you going to do? Like, I go, here we go again. I go, you know, now I'm doing all these interviews thinking like I scored the goal. And nobody gives a shit about the goal.
Yeah, everybody wants to talk about this now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm over. I'm done with this. You know, we had to play the next series against the Rangers and go on from there. But hey, man, it was a highlight. I got the puck, man. I'll never one of my favorite moments of hockey of all time.
No, it has to be. Like even with the craziness of the racist tweets, like that was still a memorable moment. Like, you know what I mean? Like regardless of all that's going on.
Just like Mike Knuble blocks his shot, goes down the ice. That shit that will never happen. Like that will you could do that 1,000 times. There's no way that some guy is just gonna block a slap shot going down the ice like that. Yeah, and then creates a turnover the other way. Yeah, it was crazy.
That was another one of those, like, where, like, you didn't even say anything. Like I saw you.
Yeah.
I was just like, what the fuck is happening here right now? Like, that's all I kept thinking. Yeah. Like, I didn't even celebrate. I was just like, what the fuck is happening? Like, I'm watching everybody celebrate, going crazy. And I'm like, did I just see what I just saw? Like, I didn't even celebrate. I was just like, what the hell's happening? You know, that's all I remember. Like, I kept thinking, and then obviously afterwards, everybody's going crazy and stuff. And you know, then like I said, you're seeing the, you know, like all the stuff with the racist tweets and all that. You know, but whatever. You know,
yeah,
it just had to be Boston. Like I said, you knew it. I was just like, it's friggin' Boston. Like you knew what it was.
Yeah,
unfortunately, I know. You know,
couple kids in their basement yapping away.
Yep.
I know.
Yep. You know, chilling on their parents' couch in the basement. You know, one slipper on, don't know what to do with their life. Tweeting that, you know,
and that was just a little small fraction. Who knows what really people were really saying?
Right, exactly.
You know,
exactly. So we'll move on to real quick to your run in San Jose. You know, where you're still residing in the Bay.
Yep.
You know, unfortunately, yes. You know, you made the Stanley Cup, which is awesome, obviously a great experience. Unfortunately, you didn't get a chance to fill the cup with Mobby or Couscous. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to do that. We didn't get a chance to fill it up with Pelori balls, unfortunately. It's all right,
I know.
It's all right. It's all good, though. Yeah. It's all good.
I know. You know, I was really hoping to bring that home to Caravan.
Oh, man. Can you imagine?
I was really hoping to bring that home.
That would have been insane. I had the Buck and the Mobby ready to go. I had it ready to go.
So thick and sweet. I think I was planning it too much that I kind of lost track, maybe. Because I was so excited. I'm like, hey, if I can bring this home, we can party on the Thursday, have it there on the Friday, bring it here, do this, bring it down the parade on the Saturday morning. You know, drink rum punch out of it. I got too excited and carried away. So,
but
maybe that was my bad.
No, that's all good. But honestly, though, like what? Obviously, you know, it's different from the other runs because obviously you made it to the cup. But what was different about that year as opposed to the other years? Outside of you know, the end result, of course. Because you had one of your best seasons individually as well, too.
Yeah, we had a good team. We had a good team, man. We had a, you know what, we had a good leadership group. A leadership group that really carried our team.
Thornton.
It wasn't really the coaches. Yeah, we had like Thornton, we had Marlowe. Mm. Who else we had? We brought in James Reimer, who was in Toronto. We brought him as a goalie. Yeah. Roman Polak was helpful. We had to, like, we were deep. Yeah. We were like deep. We had a lot of depth. And guys that been around. We had an older team too. Even the younger guys were old per se. They've had experience of years of playing, and we clicked, we vibe. But the older guys, what I learned was coaches just kind of laid out the foundation, here's what you got to do, and then the older guys set the example. Mm-hmm. Joe Pavelski, who was great too. We had a lot of laughs. We got together as a group. We ate together a lot. We did a lot of things together, a lot of team building. And then we also, they worked hard. As much fun that we had, they were the hardest workers, our leaders.
Really?
So that set a good example for guys. And even if we lost the game, it was like, yeah, it's okay, we'll get the next one. And we ended up getting, it was pretty rare that we would lose multiple games in a row. But I remember there was a trip in the middle of the season we had where we had 6 road games and we won all 6. And that was like the defining moment to say, you know what? We actually can win this thing. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, I've never won 6 road games in a row in my life.
Really?
We were steamrolling. We didn't even practice. We just played games. It was like, we went to Detroit, Boston. We were on the East Coast swing, New York. Yeah. At the time, it was like, we were just on these swings and we didn't even practice. It was like, we would just fly in, day off, rest, go to the game, win. Next day, fly, rest, show up for the following day, play the game, boom, bang it out, won again. And we did that like 6 in a row. It was a long road trip. And right from there, I was like, wow, this team is special. So I knew from there.
So you knew at that moment, that was the moment.
Yeah. For sure. We were unstoppable on the road. We only lost a couple games on the road all year. And I remember we were deep. We might have actually led the league in points for road wins, I think, that year. Yeah, we were deep, and our goaltending was, we were on fire. Yeah, the timing of it was good. And we played teams that matched up pretty well with us that year. Like, we played LA, we won like a 4-5.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The toughest series, I would say, the national one took a lot out of us.
Yeah.
That was the second series. And that went to 7, but it was, that went to 7 games. That took a lot of our. We traveled the most out of the. So I think we played Pittsburgh in the finals. To be honest with you, we traveled. I think they traveled. I'm trying to think. The mileage that they put on, we did that in one series that they did through the whole playoffs.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think they played, you know, I don't know if they played the Islanders, Washington, all close by.
Everything,
right? Quick,
close,
45
yeah.
minutes. Yeah.
But you guys have to come
to play 7 games with like Nashville. St. Louis back and forth, and we played them 7 games. If we would have maybe saved like one of those games in like if we'd have won like maybe in 5, maybe 6 games, we'd have had maybe a little more fuel in the tank at the end. We just ran out of juice.
And it's funny because I don't think the average person realizes just like how underrated that factor is in terms of traveling. How that does,
man,
to your body sometimes, man. Like people don't realize. Well, like,
we would fly out of here at 9 in the morning, 8 at 9, mm-hmm. 5-hour flight, plus a 3-hour time change.
Oh,
so
geez, yeah.
We wouldn't get into Pittsburgh till like 6. And then like, oh, you got to do media, you got to do this. I'm like, oh, man, I'm so tired, man. We're just on a flight for 5 hours traveling from East Coast to West. And it's nice when you have home ice advantage, what I learned, because you're just chilling for the first 2 games at home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Waiting for the other team.
Sleeping in
so
your
that was
bed.
That, yeah, so... You know, to leave your house at 8 in the morning and then get in at 5 or 6, it was taxing. It was taxing. It was a lot of travel, and then little things add up here and there. You know, buses, and you know, you got dinners. You just want to like you want your alone time for a couple minutes, and it's just hard to get.
No, and I can imagine. I can imagine. But
yeah.
I mean,
get that proper rest.
I'm gonna try to ask some rapid fire questions before we wrap up here.
Mm-hmm.
I have a bunch of questions, but I'm gonna save this for the next time we do this. I'm gonna save these.
Okay.
I'm gonna just file this away. But do you have a favorite moment in your time in the league? Like, I know you had so much, but like, is there like a moment where you're like, yo, like that was actually like my favorite time? Game, period, time, you know. I know it's hard to kind of pin down, though. I know it is, but
you know what?
I got to ask scoring
against scoring against Pekka in the playoffs, and like scoring against my old team in Nashville when I was in, you know, we wanted for us to go to the to move on to the conference final was something that really sticks out. I mean, it's pretty more fresh than I could think of. Mm-hmm. But that was one that kind of, because he was a guy that could not score on ever. In practices, I remember like, oh, fuck, man, this guy's got me mentally now. Like, so when I scored one on him, I knew like, oh, man, finally, here it is. And then I got another and then another. And it was like, now I got into his head. So, wow. I mean, I can't speak for him. I don't know. I'm just kidding.
But that's the way I felt that way.
Yeah, that finally, because I remember back in the day, I could not, as many practices I had with him, I could not score a lick on the man. So finally, that was one that kind of, I could say that sticks out the top of my head. I'm sure I could think of something probably tomorrow, but that's one that kind of at the top of my head.
And it's funny because people are probably thinking like, oh, this guy practiced him every day for 3 years. Oh, he's got this figured out. He's the one that they got around with Joe. He's got this figured out. Meanwhile, you're like, holy shit.
Right? Yeah, it's messy. I mean, every time I see him, I'm like, oh, man. Like, hopefully he's not playing today. Yeah, it wears on you. So it was a good moment to finally I got a chance to get one on this guy.
Who was the player that you played against that surprised you the most in terms of just how nice he was?
Pavel Datsyuk was one guy that sticks out, man, in Detroit. I mean, I got a chance to go to camp and kind of seen him there and to play against him over the years and what the stuff that this guy can do with a hockey puck is it's pretty nasty. So, he was one guy that I enjoyed watching. And like when he had it, you could feel like guys on the bench like kind of hold their breath a little bit, like this guy's going to create something out of nothing.
Yeah, he was nasty.
So he was magic. Yeah, he was one guy that I would say that was. There's so many great players, but for me, I got a chance to play against a lot of great players. You know, even like I got a chance to play like Matt Sundin in Toronto, who I kind of idolized and watched and everything. Yeah. But there's so many good players, man. Shoot, but I remember Pavel Datsyuk really stuck out.
What's the underrated thing that people don't know about like Ovi? Now, I don't mean like off the ice. I mean just in terms of playing. Mm. Like what was like the thing that maybe kind of surprised you just in terms of playing with Ovi? That maybe like, you know, you're watching it on TV, you're seeing it, you're playing against him, but now you're in the locker room every day and you're like, yo, what the hell?
What really surprised me is how many Cokes he can drink in between periods and games. that is no joke. I'm like, Jesus, you drink another Diet Pepper or Coke or Pepsi again? Like, but I would say the fact that he was cheering on when you scored, a lot of people kind of miscued, thought he was selfish. He only wanted to score goals for himself. But if you get in a huddle with him you know, I got a chance to play with him on a line for a couple times, and I'm sure he wasn't happy about it, I scored a couple goals, and he was right in my face, like screaming and yelling, and so I think that's something that people don't realize, that he actually cares and wants, you know, he's actually celebrating everybody's, and you could see it a lot when they won the cup there.
You could see
he was cheering for everybody, and I think a lot of people just don't see that. And just kind of think he's a selfish 50-goal scorer, but he just wants to score the goals all himself.
Yeah, they don't realize like he really has your back.
Yeah, he's a lot better passer than what people think too.
Well, I mean, I know when they won the cup, I know he was super happy for that reason, and I thought too because of the fact that the girl was topless by the glass. But we won't discuss that part. We'll forget that part.
Yeah. Forgot about that one.
I did.
Man, he would have partied. Yeah. He would have partied hard with that thing, man. He was a good dude, man. He was a nice guy. We partied together many nights. We hung out. You know, I think his demeanor looks like this grumpy, angry. But when you get to know the guy, you know, I had a couple of crazy nights with him. And you know he's a funny guy, man. He wants to win, you know. He just I think at the time they finally took him a few years to just figure out how to do it, and You know, obviously they had a good team when they did. They dominated. He dominated. We can tell.
Yeah. Yeah, he's. I mean, honestly, like, even if you're not a hockey fan, like, just watching him play, like, it's awesome to see, you know, in person.
Yeah. I was happy for him because he can now, people get off his back now, you know. Yeah. It was always like, just Crosby's this, Crosby's that. How come Ovi, you don't do this? He didn't care about all that. It was just the media was feeding that. But he was a guy like, hey, I'm going home to play video games and hang out. And
he was just happy with life.
Yeah. So I was happy for him. Man. That was crazy.
Just a couple more questions left, and then I'll wrap it up. But as a black hockey player, how was it playing in Chocolate City? I got a couple stories for you. Go on, go on.
We had many nights at the park on 14th. Yeah, it was a good vibe. 8th Street, New Street.
Yes, sir.
You know, it was good. It felt like being at home. Mm. It felt like just being at home. I say going back to living back on the East Coast. I know some of you guys would have spent more time there before I did back in the day. Mm-hmm. But, you know, going into the city, it just felt like being at home. And that was the thing that I thought was, you know, you can get a beef patty all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't. So it felt like home. I loved it, man. The nightlife there was fun. It was good vibe. Mm-hmm. The music, you know, you get all the good music, all the old school vibe. You get all the 90s, hip-hop, reggae, soca when you go out to, which is unusual in other spots that I ever go out.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get that in Nashville. I don't get that now in California. Mm-hmm. So my time home is spent trying to get that fixed in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, love D.C., love the Chocolate City, man. It was dope.
Yeah, I can't lie. So for selfish reasons, I was damn happy that she went to D.C. I ain't even gonna lie. Like, I was shit happy because I love D.C. is one of my favorite places. When you were going there, I was like, oh shit, I was happy as hell. But I knew it was the vibe was. I mean, D.C. is a great city, but I knew the vibe was different when you got there, just because I remember a couple of times, like, you know, you run into people, like, you know, talking to like, strangers and stuff, and you know, they'll see you and stuff. And for me, like, it was never a thing to mention it. But, like, a couple of times I was just like, you know what? I just want to see what happens. You know what I mean? So we'll be in the club and, you know, whatever. And then I'll be like, you know, at the end of the night, they'll be like, oh, like, you know, you're talking to somebody like, yo, who you here with? And, you know, you say, hey, you're with your friends, da 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 da. And I'm like, yeah, you know that guy there? And they're like, yeah. And they're like, yo, you know, he plays for the Capitals, right? And, yo, the reaction that you would see from brothers and sisters, man, watching a black hockey player play for their team, Joel, it even surprised me, like, how shocked people were, like, how happy people were with that. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, shit. Sorry, go ahead.
Let me add on to that. The one of my favorite parts, it was the ushers at the arena. I'll never forget.
Really?
The people, when they come up to me, it was like part of my routine. I would go around the building.
Really?
I'd be chatting with everybody, high-fiving the ushers, the people that are working there, because they would always tell me they'd come to the... They were so excited to come to hockey games now because I was on the team.
Yeah.
So I always make points to go around, and, you know, the fact that you kind of brought that up just reminded me of all the people. Dave, the locker room guy, another brother, he'd always be there. Monica, all these people were there. And I'd see them before and after games. You know, and chop it up with them. You know, some days I couldn't even warm up in the hallways, man. I'd be just sitting there chatting with them. I'm like, you know what, guys? I gotta go.
The game's
coming on. Yeah. But we'd just be chatting. They got so excited. Actually, when I went back to in San Jose, they all came on our locker room side. And I was still the same thing. I didn't get a chance to warm up for the game. I'm just sitting there chatting to them all. Yeah. So that was a fond memory that I had, with all the people, all the brothers and sisters that came out to support. And, you know, that said that they enjoyed. And then, you know what, when Smith Pelly won, I was so happy for the people there.
Yeah.
You know, sure. Oh, yeah, man. It was because they would have been so excited. They would have been so excited.
And
so,
he had some big goals, Smith Pelly. He had some big goals
in that
final, too.
I go, damn, I got Jolly Chichis took my thunder, man. All the people forgot about me all of a sudden.
Yeah, somehow I doubt that. But
made me a little upset, but hey, I say it's for a good cause.
But just to add on what you're saying, though, I remember one time we were out at this it was Caravan of Weekend. We're out at something. You had just signed with the Capitals. And I was at the bar with some guys. We're all at the bar, and these two guys from D.C. happened to we were chatting up with these guys from D.C. And I looked over my shoulder. You're like two people away, and I said, "Yo," and you probably don't even remember this, but you were like, I said, "Yo, that's Joel." And they're like, "Yo,
he
plays hockey." They're like, "Yo, that's cool." I said, "Yo, he's playing for the Capitals." Yo, these motherfuckers went crazy. And I think they even rushed you. I think they came up to you, doubt you. I'm like, "Yo, oh shit. And I'm like, "Yo,"
yeah.
I'm like, "Yo, should I call security?" I'm like, what did I just do? But that's to tell you, like, because I'm like, "Yo, as a black hockey player in Chocolate City,
yeah,
like, that had to be a unique situation." You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I loved it, man. Embraced it. I loved the people that would come out to the games and always find me to say, you know, make points to say, "Hey, I came to the game just to see you." Was the guy that sang the national anthem, Caleb Green, I always see before games, another brother. He'd always dab me up and wish me luck for the games and everything. And, you know, I tried to stay again. I wanted to stick around, wanted to stay, but couldn't do it, man. But it was the amount of love that I had from people. And, you know, I worked with Neil Henderson, who works for a hockey program out there, Fort DuPont there. You got to check it up one time if you're online there. Just got the rink. He's got an unbelievable program for all the kids out there, all the black kids, minority kids out in that area in Fort DuPont. Just a rink in the middle of the hood. Just boom. And right in the middle of the city, just, you know, the kids come out. He has this free program. The kids get gear. They come out. So I would go there a couple times a year to skate with the kids there.
Okay.
I really love that program. Yeah, Fort DuPont, it was with Neil Henderson. Yeah.
Definitely.
He actually got elected to the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame.
Okay, shoot.
Yeah. He runs a really good program there. He kept that going for a long time. So, yeah, you have to check it out.
Okay, nah, I will. Yeah. I definitely will.
That was one of the a few highlights during the year, and I was there to go visit the kids there, because when I came in the rink and they saw me, it was like I was like Santa Claus.
I can imagine.
And the kids just loved playing the game. Once they knew I was on the team, a lot of kids say, "Oh, I want to, since I've seen you, I've asked my parents if I can play." Oh, yeah, that's what it's all about, man.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. Yeah.
That's what it's all about. You're just trying to live your dream and you're inspiring others. You're not even realizing, man. Not even realizing.
I mean, imagine there's more of us on TV more kids will be playing, you know? So,
yeah.
We'll get there.
Only regret of DC, I never got a chance to go to Howard Holcomb. I messed that up, though. I don't know why.
My goodness.
What's wrong with me, man? I messed that up.
Oh, my goodness.
but you know, one of my last questions I want to ask is, like, what would be your advice be to, like, those kids or any kid coming up from an ethnic background that wants to come into the sport?
Yeah. First off, it's, like, guys like myself to introduce the game, like, as how, like, you know, Jules and Shane, they played, and then picked up a hockey stick.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of followed, you know, I fell in love with it. So, but once they get a taste of it, man, it's addicting. Mm-hmm. You get the hockey stick, you can, you know, your street hockey is where it started, right? People just think you just have to, like, buy equipment and get on the ice. You know, we start off playing street hockey and fell in love with it, like most kids.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, all right, well, you like it enough, we'll put you in hockey and start it from there. But, you know, we always encourage kids to give it a try. You know, just a lot of kids are just not introduce the game, right? So it's hard. They just don't see it. They don't turn on it. Who the heck's going to watch a hockey game?
Yeah.
You know, no kid's just going to sit in the state, you know, California especially.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, you know what? You know, so it's good to see now that I got a chance to come out here and see some of the, you know, the programs here. And now the kids can kind of relate a little bit more. But, you know, my thing is give it a shot. I mean, I fell in love with it from the hop. You know, I always dreamed of playing with my brothers or whoever in the neighborhood. And then, you know, once every kid wants to, you know, obviously being in Toronto, you're cheering for Leafs. So, you know, I was always hoping to, you know, my dad took me to all these games, right, growing up, of Leafs games and playoff games. I saw many playoff games, man, like Doug Gilmore wraparounds. I've seen, you know, all Maple Leaf Gardens, all sorts of it. So, my love for the game was huge, right? I can tell you a lot of stuff about, you know, what guys are wearing and skates and all little things that I just love the game. So hopefully more kids actually are signed up to play more and more all the time. More
good.
Minority kids. Yeah, which is really good. Every time if I go to the rinks at home or even here, I see a lot more black kids out there at the rink now. I mean, especially in Toronto. You know, so which is good. There's a lot more kids. And if I go barbershop or to the mall or somebody, a dad, somebody stops me and like, hey, so-and-so, yeah, my kid plays, you know, single A, double A, triple A because of guys like you. And, you know, hopefully we can kind of keep promoting and guys like that are still playing like Simmons and Smith Pelly's and so on and PK, that they keep that ball rolling, man. And you know, once the kids get a taste of it, they'll like it and keep going with it.
Yeah, I just want to keep pushing it forward.
Yeah, keep pushing, man. Keep pushing and just, you know, don't let people tell you otherwise, right? So that's, you know, some kids get discouraged from other kids, you know, because being a minority, I know it's tough to be in a predominantly white sport. You're sitting in a locker room and it's just you versus 15 other kids, you know, and you're changing, you're getting your gear on and some kids can say some mean things, you know, so don't be discouraged. You know, do what you love, man. That's what I did. I just put the head down, loved the game, and just kind of stay focused with it. And, you know, I think the love for the game just kind of conquered everything else. I just kind of tuned a lot of things out.
And it paid it forward. It paid you back, actually. It paid you back.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah. It paid you back.
Literally.
And I don't even mean financially. I mean, like, it paid you back. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I got a chance to play sport for a living.
For a living, yeah.
Shit. I yeah. never thought ever growing up that I... You know, I just wanted to play one game. I just wanted to, like, yeah, let me just, if I can get there and play one game, that'd be great. That'd be, wow. You know, and once I got a taste of it, I'm like, shoot, I can kind of keep playing a few more and keep going.
Yeah,
and just kind of rolled from there.
And you got 10 years out of it, man.
Yeah, man, who would have thought? Jeez. Man. It's crazy.
And
living my dream.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, just living my dream, that's all.
Yeah, no question. And my last question, mm-hmm. I'll ask you for now would be, and I'm just kind of coming with this on the spot, but basically, like, what do you see, like, in terms of, like looking at the whole scape of your career and stuff, like, what do you, I know you're proud of it and stuff, I know you're happy for it, but, like, what's the legacy, I guess, you want people to kind of see you as in terms of at least this first phase of it? Because I know you've still got more to go with, you know, going forward with hockey and all that.
You know, that's a good question. You know, I think just reiterating what I'm saying of a kid just grew up in Scarborough, living a dream, man. I wanted to be respected to my teammates. I think that I held that to a high standard of you know, my sense of being a great hockey player. I wanted to be a great hockey player. You know, looking back, I wish I kind of tweaked a few things here and here, but overall, I just wanted to, for my teammates, say, hey, he was a good dude, a better teammate, you know, and a great hockey player. And I just, a guy that loved the game. That's all I wanted. I just loved the game. I loved the guys. I loved everything about the game. The locker room, the traveling, the practices were fun. All the competition. A guy that competed every day. You know, I know guys. I wasn't the greatest practice player at the off days, but a guy that when it came to game time, he competed. And I just wanted a lot of people. He showed up when the big games were there. And when things really mattered. So, hopefully I can kind of pass that on to other kids to see that. And hopefully my little guy can kind of see a little glimpse of that mm-hmm. through some old footage as I force him to watch it as he gets older. I hope to pass all the knowledge that I got and share that with others too, because I mean, I learned so much from the game. Yeah. Of how to conduct yourself, how to play, and how to go about on a day to day. That it'd be a shame if I didn't get a chance to share it to others.
No, and that's why I said this is just your first phase, because I think you, just your story, man. Like honestly, like you still got a lot to give, man. So whatever capacity it is,
you don't realize, right? Like everyone's like, you got this crazy story. I'm like, it's just the norm, you know. Like we grew up in Scarborough. Mom's taking care of. Like it just seemed. You know, and I tell people the story, you know, sleeping in hospitals, this and that, mom taking care of us. Like, that just seemed like it was, you know, I guess I don't really, when I look, I haven't really looked back to say, at times I've kind of done glimpses of it, you know, but at some point, I'm sure I'll really look back and watch all the tapes and minor hockey and think about all these like trophies in the basements and all these things and really reflect of, wow, what a life, what a crazy ride it's been from start to finish. But I mean, it's at one point I will, but it says when you're in it every day and you're kind of doing your thing, you're like, the story is kind of normal, you know?
Yeah.
But for people, people always like the story and everybody, people always praise and say nice things. So, which is obviously nice for sure.
Yeah, no question. No question. Well, brother, listen, man, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yes, thank you. I know it's about 4 in the morning back home, so I apologize.
No, it's all good, man. It's all good. Honestly, like I said, I still have a ton of questions, but I'm keeping it for the next time you come on, man. Like,
and now
at this point now, you know, I can tell you this now. Now that you've been in the house now, you can pour your own juice now. Now you can go to the cupboard.
Okay,
man. The liquor's lobby. Above the fridge. You can just grab some yourself. You know, it's good to go.
Okay, I respect that. I appreciate that. And I say thank you for having me on this show. It's been a long time coming. I'm glad that I made the list.
Yes, not for sure, man. Like I said, I gotta talk to the Bouncers, man. They're fucked up. The Bouncers fucked up.
I gotta talk to them. But I'll keep listening. I enjoy listening to the other ones, so I'll keep listening for sure.
Yeah, man, no question, man. I appreciate that. All
right.
Thank you all, and I'm going to put this in caps. Thank you all for tuning in to The Stoop today on South Shore Ave Radio. And I'd like to show love and give a major shout out to Joel Ward for joining me today on The Stoop. I really enjoy going through those moments throughout his career. And even though he's had many moments, it's very cool that he was able to bring us behind the curtain for some of those moments today. It's definitely and greatly appreciated for sure. And once again, go ahead and rate and review this episode while you're also listening and subscribing to South Shore Ave. I believe in your multitasking skills even more than you do. I appreciate the love and support, 5 stars, and I'll continue to do so as long as I'm putting out content, 5 stars. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher is where you can listen to all the shows from South Shore Ave Radio. And to listen to my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. And shout out to DJ Keo for the background music, the intro and outro music as well. Definitely appreciate that, sir. I salute you. Thank you. For Joel Ward, this is Cal C. And you just tuned into The Stoop on South Shore Ave Radio. And until next time, I raise my glass of Mobby to you. Peace. We out.